Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Raptors Overthink Podcast. It's okay. Here's Savannah Hamilton. We're just having a chat before the recording, but it's tied in into the recording. But anyway, Savannah Hamilton, Sportsnet, been having a hell of a year. Not so much with the Toronto Raptors because they're having a hell of a year in a different way, but you've had a hell of a year. Just watching your career grow has been a real pleasure. How you doing, Savannah?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. What's been the best road city you've gone to so far?
Oh, man. Well, first things first, thank you for the introduction and the little bit of love there. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Road city. So I'm going to like... I'm gonna take off the obvious choices. Like LA doesn't count, New York doesn't count, Miami doesn't count. Like let's just take away those ones, okay?
Yep.
The sleeper city that I think is one of the best cities that I didn't realize was gonna be a really good city was definitely Washington. Like I loved it there. Like it had a really cool vibe. It was super safe, of course. Like the first night that we got there, I walked to the White House, showed my parents that and everything, and like all the museums in the city are free, which is pretty sick. I love museums. I didn't even get to go to any. Yeah. And then the area that we were staying in close to Georgetown, it was just so it reminded me of Streetsville in Mississauga, like the old cobble brick type of like vibe, like and just walking down the path, like the road. There's so much little cute shops and different types of shops. And it also has like that student energy because there's like a lot.
Sure.
Young people infusing life into it. So definitely Washington. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. What's been the worst city? I'm kidding. Don't do that.
No.
there's no gain to disclosing that. So why bother?
Here's my list.
You must have a list. Yeah. Everyone has a list.
I don't have a list.
No?
I love every city equally.
Of all 30 cities that you've probably gone to? Have you gone to all 30? What have you gone to?
The only place I haven't gone to yet is Charlotte and Boston, which is our last road trip. But I've been to Boston for personal reasons before, but it was really Charlotte I haven't been to.
You might be going to Boston for a couple of games in a little while. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Oh, totally. Boston's sick. Yeah. I love Boston.
Yeah, it's a cool city. I went there for the Leafs Leafs run when the collapse happened. And part of it was fun. I mean, just seeing like the culture. Like there is truly a Boston culture. And I'll leave it there. Okay. So, Savannah, a couple of questions for you. Things to go through with the Toronto Raptors. Let's start with this. Are the current Raptors, as they are with Jakob Poeltl, Fred VanVleet, that combination, Pascal Siakam, all that stuff, when they're all clicking, is this team mid? Are they good? Or are they very good? Now, I say that saying that also the Milwaukee Bucks, I think, are in a tier of their own. That's just my personal opinion, but I do like they're in a different stratosphere than the entire league, in my opinion. The Boston Celtics were kind of there, but the way they're
the
playing
entire league.
Is, yeah. I mean, I just think they're that good. However, you could put the Raptors anywhere underneath them, wherever you want. Mid, good, or very good?
Good. When they're clicking, they're good. Like, you know, I think we've only seen glimpses this season. Like, let's keep it real, like of very good. Like there's potential to be very good, but we've seen good a lot more than very good. So I'm gonna use the average here, and like when they are clicking, they're good. When they're not clicking, they can drop to mid. And we've seen moments throughout the season. The players have seen moments throughout the season where it could just doesn't look like good basketball sometimes, right? Like, and they know that, like, you know, they have it in them to be better and everything. And, you know, with Jakob now, especially, like, they have found that rhythm. And you see it, it's almost like you wish that Jakob was there in the beginning of the season, because you almost wonder where would they be now with him there back then, because they just play off of him so well. It's almost like he was one of the plugs that they needed in terms of like the, what he serves in the pick and roll and how he plays off of Fred. But then Scotty really enjoys playing off of Jakob too. Like he's a very unselfish guy. So not to get too far into like just him in particular, but just into terms of when this team is clicking, they look really great. And you got to give credit to Jakob for coming in. And, you know, he didn't even take that long to like get refamiliar or get more familiarized again with the, with the system that he left earlier. Right. So it's kind of nice, a little plug and play, but yeah, they're definitely a good team when they're clicking.
Sure. And it's actually okay to mention like Jakob Poeltl has been the biggest difference because he really in fact has been. And it also serves to the thinking that the Raptors were never really that far away with the amount of talent they have on the roster. There are just a couple of holes that they need to be fixed. And here they are now since the All-Star break, seventh in defense and 20th in offense, which is more closer to where we thought they would be this season. As you said, if they had Jakob for the entire season, I feel pretty confident saying they'd be a top six team, but then bees the breaks. Yep. That's how she goes. They found some success recently staggering their starters. The bench has been a problem all season, but you know, during the road trip especially, you just saw it against those LA teams. They would have really good stretches with the starters, bench would come in and it just wouldn't be there. But now they're really honing in on, you know, how do they make sure that they have two of Fred, OG, or Gary on the court at all times to make sure that the spacing is optimal, and also the backup center minutes. Still a problem. They've been experimenting with Christian Coloco a couple times, and it's been okay against the Milwaukee Bucks after a DMP. Precious was out there, and he had a couple of good minutes, but then we also saw Brooke Lopez just torch them in the fourth quarter. Holy smokes. Yeah. 17 points. And I say the Bucks, the reason why the Bucks come up for me as like a tier of their own is that they just have so many ways to beat you, and I think we saw like two of the ways. Two of the ways in that game, and it was successful. But they have four or five different ways to beat you. And it's they're very, very good. Very good.
That's a great point,
But in the end, I do agree with you. They're a good team. Some holes to fix, for sure. But one of them probably is, I mean, not even a hole, but it's how do they get Pascal Siakam back to being his all-star self? And it hasn't been there for a little while now. Last 13 games, 20 points, 43% shooting, 31.5% from three, eight rebounds, five assists. He was operating in phone booth the entire season, and now that phone booth has actually collapsed a little bit more. But now he's also not in the spots on the court that are the best for him. So what are you seeing from Pascal? And I guess, like, do you think this is how it's going to be for the rest of the season? Or is there reason to believe that he's going to be able to turn it around as we head down the stretch?
It's really hard for me. If you think of even the probability game, right? It's really hard for me to picture any player, let alone Pascal of all people, to have what, there's 10 more games left in the season, really? Like 10? To have 10 bad games. Like, no, that's just not gonna happen. And right now, like, players, they go through like ebbs and flows and dips in their career. Like, we know that. And it happens in the season. It happens to some people sooner, it happens to some people later. Pascal had a great at the start of the season, and then he had that like tweak when he was, they were playing against Dallas with Luka, and then he was out for a few weeks there, and that kind of took him out of rhythm, I think. But he still had glimpses of playing very well even when he was finding back his rhythm. You can look at Gary Trent Jr., where he was not shooting well at all, and he'll be the first one to tell you that in the beginning of the season, and he was getting all those extra shots up at the end of a game just to get back his shot. So he, and now he's one of the most consistent shooters on the team. And we've seen OG, we've seen Fred, like, you know, they've, every single player has had their struggles. And so right now what we're seeing is just a little bit of a struggle with Pascal. Like, I'm sure it doesn't help in terms of morale. And he even spoke to it himself that, like, sometimes, like, this is like last week he spoke that sometimes he goes through things where he, almost like his love for the game is a little tested. He still loves the game. He wakes up, he always wants to work hard and everything, but sometimes, like, when you're losing, you're not in the best mental space. However, the team has been winning, despite the fact that, like, he's not even playing at his optimal self. Like, and to be honest, I know, like, it's kind of a moral victory against the Bucks. Like, the Bucks, you're right, I totally agree with you. They have 1,001 ways to, like, get to you. And they are truly the best team in the league. And so when I think about, like, the fact that, like, the Raptors were able to come back from their shooting streak, like right off the top of the game, like, they're shooting like around 60% from three. Crazy. They got them down to 39% by the halftime. So yeah. That's an adjustment right there. And they're only down by two at half. And mm-hmm. so, and then, as you said, like, you know, Lopez, he just decided to go off in the by the end of the game. And that was really hard to contain, not to mention the Raptors, they had a lot of turnover. So like when you go back to the original question, you know, of Pascal and so he's going to come back because it's just probability game of he's not going to suck for the next 10 games or nothing. He's not even that bad right now. I think we also just have a certain level of expectation from him. And like we just need to see it probably made up a little bit more in the offensive end. But at the same time, like, you know, we should be looking out to see if he's doing more hustle plays. What is he making up for on the defensive end as well? That he could potentially be contributing to the team that way. Cause at the end of the day, like the Raptors still have so many great offensive threats, right? Like OG is shooting about 40% from three. You see, like Fred taking his shots, he's finding his rhythm again. Like he's in Gary, of course, as I mentioned, and Gary's gonna be plugged into that starting lineup soon. So like, well, most likely, with Scotty being questionable, as it was just confirmed today at practice that he's day to day. So the team as a whole is like in an interesting position, and the fact that like, you know, they're good, but their ebbs and flows can be steep sometimes, and Pascal will get out of it for sure.
It's a tricky one for him. I think teams are guarding him differently throughout the season, and you just see the amount of tension that he gathers, and it's been like that all year. And the Raptors, they've struggled to counter just simply because of the lack of shooting on the court, players going up and down, injuries and so forth. And so he's been dealing with that already. And then you add in this wrinkle of the Jakob Poeltl and Fred VanVleet, that pick and roll that's been really potent. We're going to get to that in a second, but there's no reason not to spam that because it's advantageous for your offense. And at the same time, now Pascal is working from different spots on the court. He's had to rely on his jump shot a little bit more. He's more of a spot-up shooter. And these are good things for his career at the same time. And also, like, being able to operate from different spots on the court and being able to execute and be a threat from there, again, that's very good for him if he wants to be a true top five player. But it's also okay to question that, you know, maybe it's just not going to be there for the rest of the season. Or maybe he's still unhealthy. Maybe he just doesn't have that burst because I haven't seen him blow by too many players lately. And that was something that was just like happening, you know, constantly throughout the year. And also, you know what? His defense hasn't been there either of late. Yeah. And it's minutes, it's usage, it's all these things combined, I'm sure. But in the end, the Raptors need him to be, you know, close to his all-star self if they want to make any kind of noise. And even in the play-in too, like if we're getting into like a one game winner take all kind of scenario, you still need Pascal Siakam. You need him to be like elite. You need him to be lit.
Listen, we would rather have him having a bit of a struggle moment now, right now, than in a play-in tournament, like, or like in a situation where it's truly a must win. Like I'd rather him play the way he's playing, and he knows that he could do better right now. And you know, maybe the Raptors fall into an 8th seed, potentially maybe a 9th seed, but then he's playing like his all-star self in that play-in tournament, and that gets them to another round. Like that's what, like, it's like the give and take, right? Like just being realistic about it. But like I said, I truly do think he could bounce back. He could bounce back as soon as next game. Like, and then all the worries in the world are gone all of a sudden.
Just like that. And even yesterday or against the Bucks, he shot 5 of 14. There were two pretty open layups that he missed. All of a sudden he's 7 of 14. Not so bad at all, right? And then 12 rebounds, 7 assists. He's having to pass from different spots on the court now too, as you know, teams are saying that, okay, if you're going to operate from the top of the court, like, we're going to just put all of our pressure on you to make those long range passes to the corners, and so to speak, because they know that if he gets in the paint, that's where he's going to be abusing you, right? That's where he's going to make things so hard on you. He's going to find the passing angles to Jakob. And he even did that late in the fourth quarter against the Bucks, where he had a couple of those chip shots to Jakob for a few layups. And obviously, you know, in the end, things didn't go the way that they wanted to. But this is part of the process too. And when you think about, okay, so can this certain player become like a true number one, a bona fide number one? This is part of the process. You know, even OG and Noble, we're going to get to in a second. Like, he's being successful now, but he's just making the shots that he's normally shooting anyways, you know?
Yeah.
What happens when he's actually being guarded in different ways and teams are scouting for him and stuff like that? That's where it's going to be like, okay, now you have to have a counter to the counter. Right now, Pascal has to have a counter to the counter to the counter to the counter to the counter, right? That's where elite players have, right? And is part of it, but it's just not a great time for him to be going through that, because you think, man, the Raptors have this Fred and Yak pick and roll, and we have this all-star right here. How cool would that be? But we're not there yet.
Well, here's hoping, for one. I'm an optimist. Yeah. And two,
love it.
Like, you're right. I do like your point about the, like, some of the top players in the league, they have their move and their counter move, and then a counter move probably to that counter move. You probably really only need three or four. Like, you don't need crazy amounts, but, like, you know, but that's also what makes the difference between, like, a LeBron. You know, you can't leave LeBron open in any situation. And then, you know, even if you, like, even if the whole team's guarding him solo, he'll have a move for everybody that will get them. So, so to your point, I like your point. It's like what we see in Shea Gilgeous-Alexander right now, actually. Because it's unfolding. Yeah, I know. It's unfolding before our own eyes. How beautiful is his game? Like, insane. Anyways, but he has a move to the counter move, and then sometimes he can go back to the original move. It's like he has the stop, start, change directions, and then he can change directions again. And let me tell you how difficult that is. So you got to give it to those guys who are that elite. You know, that's not every player. And I think, you know, Pascal still has another level that I'm excited to see. Like, if it's not this year, then it's probably next year. Like, development that entails.
Just a quick thing on Shea. I asked him about what exactly you're talking about, and I said, what is the importance of pace to your offense, when he was in Toronto a couple days ago, and he said that it keeps teams guessing. That's the important part. It keeps them on their heels. It keeps them on their toes. It keeps them unsure about what my next move is. Now, he has the pace. Now, that all players can have that stop and go that he has. That's like something that he's just God-given, you know, that he has that, right? But that burst that he has, being able to stop on time and just... Oh man, it's incredible, right? And that's what he has. Like, Pascal has his own things that make him special, and then this is what makes Shea special.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. It's like, it's such a level of body control. I know we could go right on into this for like the entire rest of this podcast, but it takes a lot of body control and strength to be able to switch speeds on a dime like that. Like, it's also mental. It's also head games, what he plays. Oh, like, sure. It's not just physical. Like, he knows when to change the speed and when he's truly reading the defender right in front of him, which is really cool.
Definitely. Pascal needs that 2-point range. Those shots have to get to start sinking again. When you talk about Shea, like, his mid-range game is beautiful. Every single great offensive player has to have a great mid-range game. It's just the reality. That's it.
Yep.
That's it. And so you get that back. Hopefully, like, for Pascal, it does. Mm-hmm. 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 No question. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Fred, yeah. Pick and roll. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's going to be an ongoing theme probably in this podcast. Mm-hmm. 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 Speaking of the Fred, yeah, pick and roll. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jakob's true shooting percentage over the last month is 65%. That's very good.
That's amazing.
Fred VanVleet over the last month, 19 points, 43% shooting, 38% from three, 9 assists, playmaking. Okay. This is how the Raptors have pivoted, and this has influenced everybody. This has made actually OG, which again, we're going to get to in a second. It's made him better. It's kind of decreased the usage of Pascal and Scotty, but it's working. I did a video about this, and they're continuing to evolve, those two, their partnership. But yeah, your thoughts on those two becoming this duo, and also just like, is it okay that this is a feature part of the offense?
Yes. Oh yeah. Like, I love me some old school basketball. Like, when it works, like, obviously, like, we always talk about how much the game has changed. We can go back to the basics, like literally the fundamentals, when we are all like 10 years old, learning how to play basketball for the first time and just do a pick and roll. Like, that's why, like, they teach kids this, because it just works. Like, there's so many options off of it, and there's so many ways to explore it. Like, you can start with the basic action of just a regular pick and roll screen. Okay, big man goes to the hoop, you know, guard can space and kick to the big man, or guard could use it and go down the lane. But then there's also other actions. Like, now you could do, you know, a back screen off of a roll. Like, you could do weak side kick out. You could do, like, it just opens
on the action on the action.
Exactly. Just completely opens up the, and the crazy part is that we haven't even seen the actions on the actions yet. It's just been really basic pick and roll so far. Like, there's maybe a few examples of like something else happening on the court at the same time, but not to the extent that it can be. Cause like, this is like, once again, like we were talking before, a late addition. So like, if we had this before, yeah, definitely. I think it would have been a top 16, six team in the East, just sure. because you could have evolved from, you could have been more further mm-hmm. ahead in where you're taking this. I do remember talking to Jakob about, you know, just what's working so well for him and like this dynamic with Fred. And he just said that, like, he knows exactly where Fred wants to get his pick and rolls. Like, he knows yeah. like where he wants to receive a pass. He knows that sometimes Fred just wants to take one step back out of the screen and like hit an open three. And so that like innate chemistry out of that combination is just straight up working. So that's why we're like, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. it'll be working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's working. All right.
It's not the mm-hmm podcast.
Uh-huh. It's a mm-hmm podcast. I'm going to call mm-hmm. that when I send it out. I'm going to call it the mm-hmm podcast.
Nice.
You know, when it comes to like and you talk about the fundamentals of a great pick and roll, and like you think about some of the best combinations out there, and like it's important to be able to stretch the defense and be a threat from as far away from the court as possible, and also as close to the court as possible. And even like Jakob in the game against the Bucks, like he missed a couple of chip shots that probably he would make normally. Maybe those go in next yep. time around. But the fact that he's able to be like such a, he has a floater, he's able to score off the catch, he's able to finish around the rim. Then you got Fred VanVleet. They're able to extend that screen all the way to like damn near the half court line, right? Do it there. Now he's able to get yep. his pull-up three going. He's got his mid-range going. Like, this has been evolving since the duo got together again. And now that Fred's passing craft has just escalated so much more too. And he's finding so many different ways to find Jakob around the rim, right? It's bounce passes. It's like these overhead passes. Yeah. It's like these crazy passes with spin on them. And this is all part of like his maturation processes too. And I don't want to say, like, I think it's, yep. it's annoying at points where I hear people say that, oh, look how much Fred has improved. Like, it's not, is it improving or is him just like remembering those skills?
It's a different situation. Again? Yeah.
Yeah. Like
it's not improvement. It's a different stuff, situation. Right?
Exactly. So you have to like re-engage those parts of your memory and also yeah. just like form that chemistry, because it's not like he didn't do it beforehand. He was
exactly. He just didn't have the option. Yeah. Yeah. He just didn't have the option. Like yeah. if the option doesn't exist, if you don't have a 7-footer that's as big and strong as Jakob, like then you don't have a 7-footer. Like that's, it's as simple True. As that. Like with his addition yeah. to the team, like, okay, like it does change the dynamic completely of what we're seeing out there. And like,
yeah.
this is what I said, but like, if we had him earlier, imagine how much more evolved. Now we could probably go from, you know, and we have seen this a little bit because Jakob's is also a really great passer himself, right? Like uh-huh. out of the high post, pick and roll off the top, give it like dump it to Jakob elbow because there's a short roll maybe instead. And then he could kick it down to either his fellow post player who could be cutting from a wing angle or like to a weak side kick out to OG in the corner for a three. Like there's just Ooh, so yeah. many options that you could play with yeah. him. And then I do remember Nick Nurse talking about it in practice a few days ago, where he said that now they're looking to create plays for Jakob particularly. He said, sure. you know, because he's shooting, as you mentioned, the 60% mark, that like he wants to utilize that, because it's true, his touch around the rim, like that's the other mm-hmm. part of this, right? It's not just like, oh, it's a pick and roll. Like, no, you have to respect that Jakob has a really great touch around the rim. He's not forcing it too hard, despite the fact that he is like really tall and he has that strength, and sometimes that could translate to being too like hard around the rim, but like no, instead it's like it's a legitimate threat that you have to drop on him, or you got to put a body and you got to bump him so that he's not getting an easy look. But even then, like we saw in Milwaukee, he has a bit of a floater game too. Like he just like softly floated above his defenders, which is not like a stretch because like he's already so tall, so it's not like you have to go crazy high. It's just yeah. a little touch, and like
yeah.
so that's why it's working. And that's, I would like to see, like, if, you know, especially if Jakob stays and everything works out next season, like if that evolved to incorporate just more pieces of the team together. Like I know Scotty, like we talked about this before, Scotty also loves playing off of Jakob. Let's dive deeper into that too.
Sure. So looking it up right now real quickly, because I think his free throw percentage has escalated quite a bit. You know, when he came over to Toronto, he's shooting like 60% or something like that, right? And
yeah,
I need a second just to find that. But it's obviously gotten a lot better, and that's contributing to his high true shooting percentage. And as you mm-hmm. said, like you talk about, you know, Fred being a screener and Jakob operating from the high post, like that play where Fred sets a back screen for OG along the baseline, and then you got that lob option and Jakob's finding him. Like they've run that like probably a bajillion times, and it's worked a bajillion times. So they're finding little things here and there. And I want to credit Nick Nurse and their coaching staff a little bit just for a second, because we have all
yeah.
labored on their offense, half court, being like really, really stagnant, lacking ball movement, just lacking player movement. And they're finding ways slowly but surely. Like, they're using Gary Trent Jr. on some 45 cuts. The Allen Iverson special, I love that stuff. Unfortunately, he missed a shot against the Bucks, but they were using that for Fred earlier in the season. They just haven't really found a groove with it, but I think they're realizing that they need to, you know, incorporate some more movement shooting, especially with the guys that actually have movement shooting ability. And there isn't too many of them, but when you have them, you just got to, like, you got to go into the bag of these players. You have a lot of offensive talent, and you mentioned Scotty Barnes. Like, they're going to find ways to unlock both of those two with Jakob and Scotty, and the two-man game that they can create, and some high lows, as you said. Like, it's going to get there. Maybe not this season, but probably next season will be a lot more fluid, a lot more pacey. I'll put it that way, a lot more pacey. Because right now it's still a little bit.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's the 10th, but they're going to get there, I think. And whoever is still on the team, great. Another conversation for another day. we'll have be able to do one day, but not right now. However, OG Anunoby. Okay, so 69% true shooting percentage since... over the last month or so, 45% from three over the last month. He has been very, very good for quite some time. And I said that little nugget earlier that, you know, I don't think he's really changed that much. It's more that the shots are going in, and also probably that he's healthy. But again, your thoughts on OG Anunoby, his play of late.
Yes, I pose like this question. I think I posed this question really early in the season, basically. And basically, if the Raptors were a top four team maybe, would OG be an all-star this year? He's already a defensive player. Like, we already know he's way he do an all, a defense. Like, we know that. He's shooting 40% from three. He's so effective from, like, from long distance. What's keeping him from being an all-star exactly? Because if he's literally the best defensive player in the league, and he has a solid shot that's consistent, and he has other ways of contributing too, like, you know, we see the sick dunk sometimes, we see, like, you know, him getting to the rim very aggressively and very strong. Sometimes I feel like he's a bull in a china shop, but but at the same time, I'm like, he's really hard to stop when you don't want to stand in front of him, like, if he's going up on offense. But so if the Raptors were able to send two all-stars to the all-star game, who's your second all-star? Like, what makes the most sense, right? Anyway, so I think about that, and just the fact that, like, OG has been just once again, he's had also his, like, ebbs and flows throughout the season. Like, he was injured there for a minute, like, and the he was out of rhythm there. You could tell the wrist, the finger. You know, they get a lot of, like, knickknacks that they don't even talk about, right? Like, it only came out recently that on that road trip, Gary Trent Jr. was feeling under the weather, right? And, like, here, like, a lot of media, you know, go really hard on players the moment they have, like, a stretch of, like, one or two bad nights. And so, like, but then, like that's why I, like, you know, my job, there's, like, a little smidge of human grace in understanding that, hey, it's actually really hard. I know, really, when you get knickknacks and injuries and stuff that just even goes unreported, really, you know, you can't always expect every single night to be perfect. But with OG overall, I'd say he's had a pretty consistent season. And, like, so he's playing really good basketball right now. And I think this is exactly how you want him to be playing at this point in the season too. Like, feeling, this is crunch time. They have 10 more games left. These next 10 games can dictate where they are within the play-in tournament. And if they play amazing basketball, who knows? So it's fingers crossed, they might be able to get themselves into a sixth seed, right? So, and this is, like, if all the chips fall down the correct way.
No, I got you.
But that being said, like, with OG, like, he's peaking at the right time.
Yeah. And there's a level of role acceptance. There's a bit of him just executing the plays that are in front of him right there. Like when you have the Fred and Yak pick and roll and you have Pascal Siakam, who regardless of how he's playing, he's still attracting a lot of attention. Like the job of OG Anunoby is like, you know, attacking closeouts. He's able to bully ball in certain spots and he's able to, you know, operate from the mid range. He's able to get those, you know, fadeaways a little bit. He's able to get those pull-ups and those are within the scope of his offensive game at the moment. And he's hitting those shots. And that's important. Yep. I'm happy that he, like, those occasions where he was, you know, getting four or five shots a game, like, I don't think that was great for the offense in general. Like, you want to be able to be versatile as an offense, too. And when OG Anunoby is only getting those amount of shots, it's like, you know, three, four threes and maybe a layup that didn't really go his way. Like, you're not utilizing everyone to their full potential. And also, at the same time, no OG Anunoby is not, like, a number two option, at least not yet. But if you're able to find the balance between all those things and OG is able to, you know, have a few minutes where he's able to be a higher option and they're doing that a good job of that too with, you know, the staggering that I talked about earlier on with Nick Nurse's minutes, you know, you pair him with Pascal Siakam or you pair him with, you know, a Scottie Barnes or something like that. Now OG just moves up on the totem pole and he's able to just have some moments where he's able to explore a little bit. Only 2-3 minutes. Only 2 or 3 possessions, but you're giving him that. And then makes a few shots, builds confidence. Now everyone is going to be in a rhythm as you go down to the latter moments of the fourth quarter. So it's good for him. Actually, you know, since the Jakob Poeltl trade, more of his shots are coming from three, which is hilarious because, I mean, you see his numbers escalate. And you would think that the shots are probably more two-point range, but it's just more three-point shots. And which at the same time also. Yeah, it's good for him, right? And again, you talk about rhythm. Rhythm is so important to a person's offense. And he's able to get downhill a little bit, and that's been good for him. Let's see what he continues to do down the stretch. If teams are going to continue to be okay with OG taking more shots, then he's got to be able to do it. And that's good for him. It actually started in that Washington game when they had those back-to-backs where the Raptors won one, lost one, where they put Kristaps on him. And it was like, okay, well, we can't allow this, and OG can't allow this to continue, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was able to find a rhythm. And then from then on, he's been slowly, you know, getting his shots up game by game. So good for him. I'm happy for him. And obviously the defense, like, what is there left to say about his defense? I'm not even sure if there is anything to say about his
defense. No, you can't. There's literally no criticizing his defense. Like, when you hold the league's best to, like, at minimum, like a 15-point difference after, like, on their average, or even a 10-point difference on their average, you literally can't say anything on top of, like, him being a steals leader. Like, you can't ask for more.
For sure. Yeah. Guarding Jokic, guarding Trey, guarding DeMar, guarding Beal, whoever it is, I got you.
Yeah, absolutely. Special. It's funny, though. It's funny what you mentioned with Jakob. And how that dynamic works between Jakob and OG, because now OG's taking more threes and he's not missing. Like, he's not, his percentage is consistent. That's actually the irony of it. Like, you think you add a big man and, like, maybe there's less space in the court, but actually there's more space in the court because you have to drop and get Jakob because now you're open, exactly. Like, completely exposing your rim. And so now you're taking away from attention from guys like OG who are, like, they'll just, like, sit on the corner three or maybe, like, you know, make a wing cut, but, like, they're open now. on the outside. Yeah.
What a luxury to have a passing big. Beautiful stuff.
We love it.
Yeah. We love it. Okay. on to mm-hmm. Raptors 6-9 vision. So where do you stand with that now? And where do you think the Raptors stand with that? We're seeing Will Barton. They brought him in, and the Barton minutes haven't been great. I think we should at least acknowledge that. He's been given the role as a backup point guard, and it hasn't gone according to plan. Jeff Dowden Jr. certainly would look good at points. But anyways, besides that, when you see that happen, when you see Christian Coloco getting some minutes, and I'm talking about those two in particular, do you think the Raptors are saying that, okay, maybe Vision 6-9 isn't working the way we thought it would? Or is it that we're not there yet and we have decided that we're going to win games? And they decided that as soon as they brought in Jakob Poeltl, let's try and plug some of these holes temporarily while we hope that some other players can, you know, elevate their skill set and we can, you know, be in a better spot next season.
What I really liked about Masai and how real he was on trade deadline was he completely, like, called himself out a little bit. He's like, maybe we didn't get this one right, basically. Like, he was just taking complete accountability over the season, on top of like holding others accountable too, because that's Masai. Like he said that he sat down with the players, like, hey, you guys gotta stop playing so selfishly. Because like, that was the word to use. Like he said that they were playing selfish ball. And I think for viewers at home and media, like I think we can all kind of agree with that. Like I think we can all be like, yeah, like there's sometimes where you're wondering why did he take that shot, or is there a better shot in that scenario? Or, like, you know, different types of opportunities where you have to wonder about that. So you kind of wonder, would Vision 6-9 work if guys were playing, you know, more selfless, and maybe they would have a different result. Maybe it would be something different. But don't forget, this is also a very young team, and a lot of these guys are not just like, you know, playing for playing. Like they're playing because they want to make their brand. They want to have the stats. They want to, like, they're trying to prove themselves in the league. They have a lot to, like, this is not just a here and now decision. It's a long-term style of play that they're trying to just like solidify for themselves, right? So do I think that Vision 6-9 would work in theory? Yeah, I think so. In some regard, yes. But
in spurts.
With this, exactly. Yeah. In this scenario, with this team, and also the style of coaching and stuff like that, you know, I think that having a traditional center and a bit more of a traditional point guard, even though, as you acknowledged, like he didn't have his best game the other day, is still a really good mix. It's a very good combination. They almost needed the stability. That's the thing. Yeah. I think the Vision 6-9 was almost too fluid. It was too flexible within the realms, to the point where people almost didn't know what their role was. Like, cause it's like, well, we're all 6-9. Like, so I can play, you know, the 4-5, but I can also squeeze into a 2-3 if they really need me to. Like,
what is a 4-5-2-3? Like, who is who?
literally, can you even define, like, hey, like, you know, I don't know. Like, Chris, you are 100% a 4. Like, no, because he's played 5 and he has a 3-point shot. So he could probably hang out on the wing too comfortably. Like, so there's like, and then with Precious too, right? Precious would be an undersized 5. And then, but then Precious has enough ball handling that he can go into a 3. Like, so I think it murkies up the water a little bit. I think if the team was overall older with a bit more veteran presence, it might have worked a little bit better. But they wanted that young, youthful, athletic team. And I think they have it, but now they're tuning it to what the needs are this season immediately. And that is to have a bit more of a structure to it, as that's hence why like the pick and roll is working. That's why OG's finding his shots on the outside better. Like they're like, oh, I remember this. Like this is how I played basketball.
Yes.
You know, before. So I'm not saying that it didn't work. I'm just saying that I think in this set of circumstances with this team in particular, I think that they kind of needed a bit more of a structure.
Gotcha. Great points by you there. Even when I said that, you know, who is a 2 and what is a 2 and so forth, like there's always going to be someone who's going to be at the top of a zone. There's always going to be someone who has to guard, a Bradley Beal and things of that nature. So there is still, even within their positionless style of basketball, there is still positions that just inherently have to happen. And when that happens, you are going to get into a little bit muddy spot. And I've heard Thad Young talk about it. I've heard Chris Boucher talk about it, saying, you know, it's like we get on the court and sometimes it's like, who is the 4? Who is the 5? And that does create confusion when you have a more realistic, a more traditional lineup with like a Will Barton, with a Christian Coloco, things just are simplified. And it's just less things to worry about for a player. And that's going to help, you know, the process. At the same time, you know, Vision 6-9 can work to some degree, but the players, the skill set necessarily isn't there. Like there are things that you need, especially on offense, that a 6-9 player only at an elite level can do. Like when you need a player to run off screens, we need someone to hit a pull-up shot from the mid-range. We've seen it this season that sometimes it gets really hard for these guys to do it, and that's okay because they're just not there yet, you know? And even on defense, screen navigation, for instance, smaller players are probably better at that. That's just like reality, you know? And then if you don't need that, then hopefully you have like a big center at the basket that you can funnel players to. They didn't have that either.
That's true.
Right. So it's a complicated thing. And I think a lot of teams, like they realize, you know, the flaws of the Raptors and how they can simply, like you have a a flying around defensive style, and at the same time you have no rim protection, that was, you know, worked against the Raptors for most of the season. Mm-hmm. But now they have Yak, and it's been obviously very helpful. I do think Christian Coloco is going to be a rotation player next season. I think that's, I'd almost guarantee it, because I think he's just going to continue to develop during the offseason. Yeah, and I mean, why wouldn't you? If you have, you're realizing the flaws of your vision, why not use this player who's clearly going to keep on getting better and has actually been an impact player to some degree, you know, this season. So I think he's going to be there, but like, you know, Precious Achiuwa, Chris Boucher, Thad Young, who's still on a contract, although he gets really cheap next season, actually. I think there's going to be some movement within that. I'm not saying who, where, what, it also like it depends on who the Raptors decide to, you know, re-sign during the off season, because there's a few players they got to make decisions on. However, they do need more shooting juice. That has to happen. Pascal Siakam can't keep on operating this way. It's not even fair at this point. And change is imminent. But in the immediate, if they're looking to get into the first round, if they want to win some play-in games, if they want to make some noise, if you want to keep things interesting, they have to make some changes to help this team reach a different level this season. But in the end, just like it was last season, another offseason of very critical development for an assorted amount of players, right? Yes. 6-9, it's not going to be solved in one offseason, two offseasons. It could be three or four, but there is juice to it. However, you need a lot of your players to just get a lot better at a lot of different guard-type versatile plays. And that isn't done over one offseason, two offseason. It takes a long time, and that's what the Raptors are gambling on. Good, bad, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out.
Indeed.
Well, and that's also assuming that they're going to stick to Vision 6-9 too. Like they might be we tried it. Let's just do something else. Sure. See if that works. And then, you know, also you don't know, you know, what pieces might be available come off season, like that you weren't expecting to be available. And now they want to trade from their team, or they want to trade from this team or whatever. And all of a sudden, like, you know, like you're not going to turn down a guy who's amazing, like a really solid guard for Vision 6-9. You know, you're gonna take the solid guard. Like, so there's some leniency to be had even within that. So we'll see what happens. That's all I can say.
What's curious to me though is that I still think about this, is that, you know, Will Barton, he wasn't a traditional point guard when he came to the Raptors, and he hasn't really done that much of it, even during, going back to his Denver days. So why was he given the assignment of being a backup point guard? I mean, I kind of like the idea of him being like a corner three-point shooter, a spot-up three-point shooter, you know, spacing the floor. It's a curious choice that the Raptors made with that. I understand sort of why they decided to do that, but because he's got decent size. For someone at his position, he's a guard with some, you know, with some length, but I don't know. It was a weird one for me, but they're still using him this way.
I mean, I feel like I think the give and take in that situation was also, don't forget, like, you know, Wancho's contributions and stuff like that. Like, I feel like they felt like they weren't getting what they needed out of Wancho, and they probably were looking for, okay, what's another option and what do we need in this moment? And so, you know, I'm not saying that like he was the perfect fit, but he was a fit enough.
Sure.
So I feel like maybe that's more of the logic. I can't say for sure, of course, but like, I feel like when they got him, you know, they still needed some stability in that backup point guard role. And I think just by not necessarily the type of game he plays, but by the veteran presence he brings, he has the ability to bring a bit of a calmness to the storm. I don't think they're asking him to be a solid scorer or attack the rim, or they don't really want to do too much, to be quite honest, I don't think. And also when I spoke to Will himself, like, you know, when he first arrived, I said, you know, what's your role? What do you plan on bringing to the team? And he told me, he was like, honestly, like just veteran presence and a calmness. Like, I want to make sure that like when I'm on the court, like everything's under control. I think that there's some games, some moments in games that we have definitely seen that where he's really not trying to like do the most, and you kind of appreciate that because he's not trying to hog the ball, or he's not trying to like, you know, let me show you about like what I can do here in this moment. It's more so, how can I get my teammates open, or how can I get my teammates available and stuff like that. But I think the last game that we saw in Milwaukee, he kind of went away from that, And that's the thing that wasn't working, right? Like, and that's not what he's necessarily like here for, that he told me at least. So I think that if he gets back to his like original like, you know, role of just being like, hey, I'm a veteran point guard, been there, done that, you know, he
seen
has
a lot, done a lot. Yep.
Exactly, right? In yeah. Denver, he leads, he's second now. I believe Jamal Murray just passed him in the most 3-point field goals made. And so like, you know, he's had his day essentially, right?
Sure.
So now he's just bringing that veteran. And I feel like they probably felt like he brings more in this current situation, in this moment, than what they were getting or needing out of Wancho.
Yeah. I hear it. Tricky thing for the Raptors, you know, trying to maintain their vision at the same time, trying to, you know, add some shooting pop, tough balance that they're trying to strike there. I still think that if they just sign Jeff Doughton and they convert him, I think he would do a lot of what they're looking for. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like, you know, Jeff Doughton Jr. is like a starting point guard, you know, future all-star or anything like that, but they need like such specific things. And look at the impact that Jakob Poeltl made, you know? Like, yeah. It was just like, they need like some, like just a few connective pieces, and it fixes so much for them. But I mean, it's just my opinion. I understand the other side of it too, is like having some veteran presence, like you said, handling the ball, it is pretty critical too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And once again, I just want to make it clear as well. That's not to say that Wancho didn't bring anything. Like, he absolutely, you know, he was part of that Vision 6-10, the original thing. And unfortunately, like, when things get down the stretch and you got to change it up, sometimes it's your game that doesn't necessarily fit the puzzle, but that doesn't make you any less of a player. I do think that Wancho had some really great moments defensively. Like, he was a bit underrated in that regard. And also, he was a great glue guy. Like, he could pass the ball really well. So,
great cutter.
Case, like, and to your point with Jeff Down Jr., we'll see what happens there, of course. But I also think that he brought a lot to the court in terms of like just a spark. Like, he just reinvigorated the team sometimes, like just coming off the bench and just being ready. So we'll see what happens there.
Stay ready so you don't have to get ready. I love that quote. Okay, final 10 games. Have you looked at them? Do you know what the dealio is? The games are that they, I got the list here.
Final 10?
I'm just curious. Yeah, the final 10. You got in order, Pacers, Pistons, Wizards, Heat, 76ers, Hornets times 2, Celtics times 2.
Yep.
Milwaukee Bucks. Mm-hmm. No more back-to-backs. Mm-hmm. They're done with that. The OG question for you was like, how do they do on the homestand? But I mean, out of those 10 games, just off the top of your head, how do you think the Raptors fare? I'm going with 7-3. At least that's what I hope. 7-3.
I was going to be the optimist.
You can go higher.
7-3 would be. I was going to say 10, obviously. 10. No, I mean, being realistic, you know, I do think that it's very possible to win against the Pacers, the Pistons, the Wizards. Heat
you
should
better
be
win
a
those
possible
three.
Game to
you
grab.
Better win those three. Yeah.
Those three for sure. Then you go, you know, 76ers, that's a gamble. Like, you, that's a bit more of a, they're a tough team to match up with. Joel Embiid is Joel Embiid for a reason, right? And then Hornets, I hope that they get both of those. You know, Hornets are having the season that they're having. And then Boston, that will be tough, super, super tough. But you almost wonder, by the time they play Boston, will Boston be even playing all their guys? So it's actually technically possible to win both Boston games, if not one of the games, just by the fact that you don't know who they're going to play and who they're not going to play, because they have their sights on a championship. And then, of course, the last thing you see is the Bucks. Same thing kind of goes for the Bucks in this situation, too. You don't know who the Bucks are going to play or who they're not going to play. And so those last five games of the season actually are a little bit up in the air, like in terms of like, so Charlotte should be a lock, but then Boston. So the last three is debatable depending on who the other teams decide to play or rest, essentially.
No question. I look at it like, you just have to beat the Pacers, Pistons, Wizards. Like, that has to happen.
Yeah.
And you add in the Hornets times 2, five games right there, you just have to win, right?
Yeah.
Then outside of that, Heat 76ers, Celtics times 2, Bucks. I would imagine that by time we get to that Bucks game, that they're going to have the number one seed like solidified. Like they're already running away with it already.
Yeah.
And like, they're finally healthy. And now they're just like cooking everybody. At least to, I mean, from what I'm seeing, I mean, they lost the game previously to the Raptors. They lost to the Pacers. They squeaked by the Raptors there. But I mean, I just think they're going to get into a groove and they're going to just keep on running away with it. And then you just, yeah, the Heat 76ers, like those are games that they can win. Will they win? I don't know. But
yeah,
at the very least, that Heat game, like that has great implications for the Raptors. And also, like if you end up playing that team in the first play-in game, want to send a message. And I think the Raptors, just with their defense and the Heat kind of having some issues on offense, like lacking a little bit of juice. I mean, Bam's playing incredible, but that's a game that they should win. Also, they're at home. So I'm hoping for 7-3, but at the very least on this road, on this homestand, I don't know, man. You got to like, if you are the team that you say you are, you probably should win all four games.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Agreed. Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Yep.
Hopefully.
That's what makes them good. Mm-hmm. That's what makes them good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's just been fun.
Yeah. All right, Savannah. Thanks so much. This was a lot of fun. I've been enjoying your work all season, watching you continue to grow and all that stuff. It's been really cool to see, getting your national shine. So keep on doing it. Just beginning for you. Closing thoughts.
Well, thank you so much. I feel all warm inside. I don't know how to express my emotions back, but thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. This conversation has been like, honestly, like a highlight of my day. So I appreciate you having me on.
Hey,
and for the listeners that didn't know, we were supposed to record this like the other day and I got stuck in Milwaukee. And so appreciate the accommodation.
Oh, no question. No question. One of the PR people was talking to her about some of the best spots in Milwaukee, because I saw some of them during the championship run. I'm like, there's a coffee shop called Rochambeau, which is really, really good. I'm not sure if she ended up going or not, but anyways, maybe if you do end up going for that final Bucks game, which I believe is in, it's in Milwaukee, I think. Anyways, check it out. Rochambeau. Okay. Great lattes.
Sounds good. Love it. All right.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Savannah. We'll talk soon.